Well, good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Friday, May 9th. I'm Ray Graff. You know, it's lousy out there. I'm not one to complain. Well, wait a minute. I am one to complain. But I like it a lot. But today we'll talk about what's in your pantry. You know, this is a day where you grab something that you have put away. You don't go out to the store. You make it. What's in your pantry? We'll talk today to Jennifer Clare, culinary instructor and founder of Home Cooking New York. We'll tell you about how to stock your pantry. Talk about plenty of options when you need a quick meal. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. That's the premise. VoxPop at WAMC.org is the email address. Feel free to join in on this rainy day. Jennifer Clare and you coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back our buddy Jennifer Clare. Jennifer is a culinary instructor and the founder of Home Cooking New York. That's a cooking school in New York City and online internationally. She's the author of 6 Basic Cooking Techniques, Culinary Essentials for the Home Cook. Jennifer is a former food editor at Martha Stewart Living, former recipe editor at the Wall Street Journal. Today, we're going to talk about cooking from your pantry and also how to stock your pantry so you have plenty of options when you need a quick meal at the end of the day or on a rainy, cruddy day like today. What's your favorite go-to pantry item? Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or feel free to email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Jennifer Clare, welcome to the show once again.
Thank you. I'm so sorry. I'm not there in person, but these flash flood warnings are just a little too terrifying.
Exactly. Well, unless you have a hovercraft, you know, it's really not wise to drive unless you absolutely have to. So it's okay.
Exactly.
Your audio quality is excellent. So
You know why. I'm in my closet.
Well, there you go. You know, make sure no one locks you in, and we'll try to get through the show. What's new at the Home Cooking New York?
Oh, what's new at Home Cooking? I guess we're gearing up for summer. With the change of seasons, I always get excited. We started doing these farmers market tours. The Union Square Green Market, which is the biggest farmers market in New York City, operates 4 times a week. And so since things are starting to come out of the ground in New York very slowly, it's fun to go visit the farmers market so we can – I just feel like after many, many months of cold storage food like pears and apples and – there's not a lot of local New York State agriculture during the lean months, unless you have a high tunnel or a greenhouse or you're a hydroponic farm. It's really nice to get started with the seasonal vegetables and fruits that come out. You know, we only have about 5 or 6 months of growing season where we are. And so I love to celebrate the new stuff.
You know, so we haven't even hit the warm weather and you're already depressing me saying it's almost over, you know?
Almost over. It's almost starting is what I'm trying to tell you.
Okay, fair enough. Yes. Jennifer Clare is our guest today. Pantry cooking today and stocking of the pantry. Now, the pantry for me, this was a big item long about, I would say February, March of 2019, when all of a sudden there were lines at every grocery store and people were panicking. And so that's when I mean, we never really stocked the pantry. I have 5 children. You're lucky if you don't lose a finger at a meal. But we started stocking it up, and it's great to have stuff, especially on a day like today. Can you guess what my number one item is? I'll give you a hint.
Okay. Like what?
It begins with an S and ends with a Pam.
Spam.
That's correct. Spam. That's the thing that I stock up on. It has a shelf life of over 400 years, and it's just great to have. What do you stock in your pantry?
Well, first, before we even talk about what I stock in my pantry, which is a lot, I'd like to clarify that there are 3 pantries in everybody's house. I think that a lot of people think that the pantry is just the thing like in the cupboard or like the dry shelf or behind some door, right outside your kitchen. That's just the shelf stable pantry.
Okay.
But the pantry is also your refrigerator and your freezer. So stocking those with things that don't go bad, you know, there's plenty of things that belong in your refrigerator that have, a years long shelf life. So I definitely stock all of those things. Only the refrigerator is the place where things tend to expire.
Yeah.
But shelf-stable things and also your freezer are two places that you can pretty much, you know, like you said, live for 400 years. Maybe not that long. But,
well, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
When you put something in the freezer, you know, my, and you've worked with me enough to know that I'm not that swift when it comes to food. But when I put something in the freezer, I figure, okay, this is like Walt Disney's head. It's good forever, you know. But
yes.
Everything has a shelf life even in the freezer, right?
It has a shelf life in the freezer for flavor. I mean, bacteria stops. So there's no risk of contamination or, you know, going bad, quote unquote, unless you lose power and your freezer defrosts by accident.
Right.
But sort of bacterially, it could live for really ever. But the things that go wrong in the freezer over time is loss of flavor. So, you know, if you have something, some leftovers, like you made black bean soup and you had too much, so you put it in a container and you tossed it in the freezer, you know, to have it another time, that won't ever really go bad, except that, you know, if you wait for 6 months, a year, it's just going to be a little bit wan in terms of flavor, and you may not enjoy it as much. And then the other thing that happens is freezer burn. And so things that you put in the freezer that are exposed to oxygen, so if oxygen is present, like say you have a pork chop and you put it in a little Ziploc bag, every place where there's a little bit of oxygen in that package is going to start to form ice crystals, and those ice crystals adhere to the food and they kind of eat away at the food. Not eating away in a fungal way. So it's not dangerous, but it sure detracts from the, you know, the texture of the meat. So you're going to have a dried out pork chop. So honestly, the best thing to put in your freezer are things that are vacuum sealed. You know, and almost everything you can buy now is vacuum sealed, like sausages and, you know, chicken breasts come in like little vacuum sealed packages.
Do you have a vacuum sealer machine?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't need to, because I feel like that's kind of, that's the new, it gives longevity to things. So like if you go to Trader Joe's or most supermarkets, you can buy things, like even ground beef comes in a like a cryovac, you know, one pound block.
Yeah.
So I always say buy those, because those you can toss in your freezer and they will never get freezer burn because there's no oxygen in them.
Interesting.
And so that's a good little trick. And then it's nice to have proteins available that you don't have to go to the supermarket for. So I spend a lot of time making sure I have proteins at hand, since, you know, with a meal, that seems to be the most important aspect of it.
Yeah.
So if you have like canned beans or canned tuna in your pantry, and then you have, you know, frozen sausages or wild shrimp. Shrimp's another thing that actually is beautiful frozen. Most shrimp that you get anyways is previously frozen. And it, because it has a shell around it, whether you freeze it and then defrost it, you're not going to notice a difference in texture. Whereas certain things, like I'm not a big fan, although people do it and it's fine, is frozen fish, like fish fillets.
Yeah.
When you freeze something, freezing it is not the issue. It's defrosting. Because when you defrost something, you lose a lot of the moisture. You'll see, like when you defrost something, there's always like a pool of moisture around it. And that was moisture that used to be in the meat or the seafood. And so it does dry it out. So freezing things that are higher in fat is always going to be a better option than freezing and defrosting something that is very lean, because when you lose that precious juice, you'll really notice it. Whereas shrimp is something that I always have a bag of frozen wild shrimp, because you can just grab a handful of frozen shrimp, put them in a bowl of, you know, room temperature water, and they'll be defrosted in 15 minutes. It's good for not planning ahead.
Jennifer Clare is our guest today, culinary instructor, founder of Home Cooking New York. We're talking about what's in your pantry today, how to brew up something very nice at the end of the day for a quick meal. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. What's your favorite pantry item? We'd love to hear from you. Okay, now wait a minute. Let's just jump back to the shrimp. You said most shrimp is frozen once. Understood. Now, again, I'm a little slow on the uptake, but I thought you shouldn't refreeze things.
You shouldn't refreeze things. So when you buy a bag of frozen shrimp, that shrimp has been frozen once. So it's been frozen by the manufacturer. You take it home, put it right into your freezer. So it's still frozen once. And then if you defrost it, you're using just what you need. And the nice thing about shrimp is that they're all separate. So you just grab what you need for that day. But you're absolutely right. Freezing and defrosting and then refreezing, I mean, it's bad for two reasons. One is it's twice as much moisture loss, you know, than the first time around. So you're really desiccating that food. But also, if it's food that you don't cook all the way through, like i.e. like a medium rare hamburger, if you had defrosted meat, then it's very dangerous, because if you're not cooking all the way through, you have so much bacteria in the center of, you know, all over that food, because it's been frozen, defrosted. So it's only for things that you would cook all the way through, and then, that's a pretty leathery thing.
Leathery, did you say?
Leathery, meaning if it's been frozen and defrosted twice, and then you cook it all the way through, it's just got no moisture left.
I had to give you bonus points earlier for using the word wan, which was great. I don't think that's been used on this program ever, so lovely. The number here is 800-348-2551. We'll take a quick break. We're raiding the pantry. It's a pantry raid with Jennifer Clare, 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Yeah, buddy, there's Superstition. Ronnie Cuber on the Barry Sachs, Bobby Broom on the guitar. It's Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. We're talking about pantry items today with our pal Jennifer Clare from Home Cooking New York. You know, before we get to the calls, couple things. One, I like to, in fact, thank God, I went to the store last weekend and got a bunch of cans of soup. You say, wow, it's going to be warm. Why soup? But today is a day for soup, you know?
Exactly.
And I always look for the dates that are way far in advance, 2-3 years, just in case there's another pandemic. You know what I mean?
Oh, I hope not.
Hey, what about freeze-dried? Do you do any freeze-dried things in your pantry?
No. I mean, freeze-dried things are like, sometimes they make freeze-dried fruit, which I kind of like. You pop them in your mouth and they're like dust.
Yeah.
But you mean like freeze-dried meats?
I don't know. Freeze-dried anything, you know.
Yeah. No.
I hadn't thought it through that far, actually. I'm not sure what I meant.
I only know freeze-dried food from when I was a kid and my parents got me freeze-dried ice cream from, you know, it's what the astronauts ate. So exciting.
Yeah, I remember those places, and it was always odd. After a while, like a couple spoonfuls, you're like, okay, I'm in. But in the beginning, you're like, wow, this is the weirdest thing ever. Freeze-dried coffee, I remember before the pandemic, I bought a big thing of that. Never ended up using it, and I think I ended up chucking it. But somebody told me it's not good because it has formaldehyde or something in it when they make the freeze-dried. You know, all of this folk wisdom might have a kernel of truth, but it's enough to scare the bejesus out of me.
Right. Well, less processing is always bad. Anything that has to go through that many steps to get to your pantry, freeze-dried coffee, I just feel like somewhat of an abomination.
Well, the teriyaki spam is a must-have in the Jennifer Clare. I'm telling you.
What are you doing? I want to know what you're doing with this teriyaki spam.
Oh, my gosh. So, you know, they have different kinds, and I really didn't discover this until the pandemic. And, you know, you fry it up. If you're lucky enough to have eggs, if you took out that second mortgage and got some eggs, you could do that. You could do all kinds of things with it. It's a lovely protein to have on hand. And I think it'll survive a nuclear winter, I'm pretty sure.
I think it will, yeah. I know. A lot of people love it. And there's a big sort of love for it in Asian cooking. So,
yeah.
Like, I've had spam sushi. They use it a lot in Korean cooking. So, you know, I've sort of come around to it. I don't
Good for
go
you.
Out of my way to have it, but I appreciate it. It's shelf stability.
Well, you're someone who, I mean, heck, you were a food editor at Martha Stewart Living. You were also a recipe editor at Wall Street Journal. But you don't come off as a snooty foodie to me.
Well, I appreciate that. That's funny, because when I first started dating my now husband, he told me, you know, later on when we were dating for a while, that he was worried that I was going to be a snob about food because of my, chosen career.
Yeah.
Because I remember once we were going somewhere and I suggested that we go to a diner, and like, he couldn't believe it. He thought I'd only want to go to the fanciest restaurants. I was like, that's insane. No, I love good food.
So that's when he knew you were a cheap date, and it worked out in the end.
Exactly. Good.
That's great. Jennifer Clare is our guest today. Let's hit the phones. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's pantry items. What's your go-to item in the old pantry? Let's see here. Let's go to Chris in Housatonic. Hello, Chris. You're on.
Jennifer, I'd like to, I'm on a quick.
Hey, Chris, can I stop you for a minute, big guy? Can I just stop you? Can you turn the radio down? Because we're hearing, 20 seconds ago. Oh, you did. Go ahead, man.
I like to cook salmon and fresh fish and quick eggs on a quick day.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh fish?
And, add a little hot sauce to the eggs and stuff like that.
That's nice. You can't really put that in your pantry.
Sauce, any kind of spicy condiment is an amazing sort of way to uplift flavor instantaneously with very little work. I'm a big fan of cooking with hot sauce too, and chili crisps or sriracha, but I have a whole pantry full of hot sauces from everywhere because Tabasco is good, but there are hot sauce, every country has their own version of a hot sauce, and it's nice to have them all. And they
I like Louisiana hot sauce.
Yeah.
Yeah, buddy. Well, Chris, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Do you say chili crisp? What's that?
Chili crisp. I know. That was one of the saddest things that happened when this rain came and stopped me from driving to Albany is I was going to bring you some homemade chili crisp. So chili crisp is, I don't know who claims to have invented it, but it's Chinese, but it's also, there's Mexican chili crisp. It's basically dried chilies and dehydrated garlic and shallots and different sort of spices and lots of nuts and seeds. So there's a lot of debris, and you take boiling oil and you pour it over these, basically a bowl of dry ingredients, and it sizzles and fries, and you let it sit, 10 minutes to let it infuse, and then you put a lid on it and you store it in your pantry. Or not, I think it probably should be in your refrigerator if it's homemade. But it's just lots of different things. It's savory, it's umami, it's spicy, it's crunchy. So the blandest meal, if you just roast some salmon and have some rice, if you drizzle this on top of it, it's an explosive experience. And I like to have a lot of fun when I'm eating, so chili crisp is one of my favorite condiments.
That's what you were going to bring?
I was going to bring it. I made it. It's expensive. Actually, it's not expensive. There are some brands that are expensive, but you can get a small jar, and just look for it in any supermarket in the, sometimes they call it the international aisle or the Asian aisle, but it's going to be there. It's called chili crisp. Mm. Typically, it has peanuts in it, and it's just, if you like hot sauce, then you'll love this. But it's just a crunchy, savory oil that you drizzle on. I can't think of anything not to put it on.
Way to rub it in. I mean, you're 100 miles away, and now I want chili crisps.
You can get it. The homemade stuff's good. Yeah. I definitely like my chili crisp, but you can get it at the supermarket, I promise. And if you've never seen it because you haven't known to look for it, it's pretty much in every supermarket now. Even the most, basic chain has it in the, where all the other... I don't know what the brands are, but there's lots of Chinese brands in every supermarket. It's going to be there. Lum Key, I'm thinking of. That's the brand that I know.
Any dish that features debris as a menu item is I'm all in. Jennifer Clare's our guest today. 800-348-2551. It's pantry cooking today, and let's go to Anita in Hyde Park. Hello, Anita. You're on.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a question about, I buy already cooked shrimp that's frozen and put it in my freezer that hasn't defrosted. And I'm wondering on something like that, is there a different shelf life or will it maybe just get freezer burn? But if I keep it frozen.
I would say that if you have a choice, I would buy uncooked shrimp only because if it's frozen cooked shrimp, you have to cook it again to, make it something you want to eat. And shrimp, because it's a mussel, there's no fat in it and there's no moisture in it. So cooking already cooked shrimp overcooks it and just makes it tough. So I think...
Right. I understand that. Usually what I do is put it into cool water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're doing the right thing. I just feel like it's a better texture if you start from raw But the frozen
cooked. Is there any danger in the oven?
No, no, not at all.
Okay.
The only danger is texture. Yeah, you're welcome.
All right, fair enough.
The only danger is loss of texture. So usually when it's the cooked frozen shrimp, it already has the shell taken off. So it does, again, you have the ice crystal issue. So.
All right.
But no, not dangerous.
Anita, thanks for the call. Shrimp is a muscle? Really?
I'm just saying the body itself, you're basically just cooking all flesh.
Yeah.
And so as it cooks, it gets tighter and tighter and tighter. Same thing with lobster. So it's much more noticeable when you overcook it because there's nothing in there to keep it tender and juicy because you're just tightening this muscle more and more and more. It's not a muscle itself, but it basically contracts and tightens the way a muscle does. Because there's nothing in there. There's no connective tissue. There's no fat. So that is what happens with things like shrimp and lobster. You don't have a lot of give in terms of between, cooked well and then overcooked and chewy and rubbery.
That is so true. It is a pantry cooking today with Jennifer Clare. Jennifer is a culinary instructor, founder of Home Cooking New York, and it's going well for you, I assume. Are you still doing the online?
Nope, no more online. We shuttered that business at the end of 2024 just because it was a holdover from
bad
the
times.
Pandemic.
Yeah.
And we just didn't have many, everybody wanted to get back into in-person. And even though we had some clients that don't live in New York City, we had to say goodbye to it. I think I was ready to put that era, away.
It still has pain to think about that time.
A little bit, yeah, exactly.
You ever run into Martha Stewart when you're down there, down in New York?
No.
No? Would she remember you if you did?
I don't know.
No.
I don't know. It's been 20 years since I've worked there.
Yeah.
So and she's had a lot of people come and go.
Yeah.
So, I loved that job. It was an amazing time, but I am happy to be my own boss.
Well, she's in Connecticut, right? So, Martha, give us a call if you're listening and talk to your old pal, Jennifer Clare. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Pantry Items. And let's go to Holly in Lenox. Hello, Holly.
Hi. Jennifer, I have been told throughout my lengthy life that if you buy things like, I'm talking more like meat, chicken, packaged stuff as opposed to dry goods, that the expiration date is sort of like safe and that there's a little wiggle room around it. So, for example, if I buy some hamburger and the expiration date is May 5th, I might be able to keep it till May 7th or 8th. Is that right? Or is what's your view on that?
Yes. I mean, I'm glad that you brought this up because the idea of an expiration date and a Best Buy date, those are suggestions. There is no government body telling you when something expires. It is just, it helps with people who own supermarkets knowing how to rotate things, when to put things on sale. But especially with meat, they're always, and dairy as well, you'll see expiration dates and you'll notice that it's fine past then. With meat, I feel like, yes, a day or two more, but you really should use your faculties. When meat has gone off, it is very clear. It has an acidic smell. It has a very off smell. Like, so if you open up a package of hamburger meat and it's 2 days past that time, make sure you give it an extra good sniff because food that has turned is not benign. It's very clear that it's turned. And so I often, because I actually, this question comes up a lot in cooking classes, and people are trying to tell me that they throw things away. And I'm like, did you smell it? And they said, no, but the expiration date passed. I was like, well, that was a waste of all that food. You at least, because you can detect if it's bad. It's not, silent thing. So, you definitely are right. There is a little bit more wiggle room in there. And especially with dairy, the whole Best Buy thing that's on like a carton of milk. I mean, I'm sure everybody has the experience where things sometimes will go bad even before the expiration date.
Yes.
So, it's true on both sides of that expiration date. So absolutely trust yourself, your sense of smell and your sense of taste when it comes to milk. I wouldn't taste raw hamburger meat.
No, that's a good plan.
Yeah, but definitely taking a little sip or, when you smell something and it's off, it's off.
So the expiration date could be your expiration date if you're if you're not careful. All right.
It's a suggestion, but it's a good to know that you will know more than that date.
Jennifer Clare is our guest today. It's 800-32. Nope, that's the fun drive number. That's a bad auger of a fun drive to come. The number for this show is 800-348-2551. Remember that for now. You'll hear the other number fairly soon.
I bet.
Dee writes in, what are the key elements of a well-stocked pantry?
Oh, such a good question. Well, again, there are the three parts of the pantry. There's the dry goods, the refrigerator, and the freezer. But in terms of like what's in the pantry, just making sure that you have one or two of each sort of category. So like multiple kinds of vinegar. So every time that you're cooking a meal and you want to make it like a little zingy, it's not always one vinegar, like not only balsamic vinegar in your pantry, not only red wine vinegar. Rices and pastas, making sure you have a couple different shapes of pasta, long ones, short ones, you know, cans of tomato sauce, you know, basmati rice and brown rice and or sushi, different kinds of grains. So not every meal is exactly the same. And then I'm just a big fan of all those things that give you lots of flavor. So making sure you have fresh spices, meaning spices that when you smell them, they smell like the spice. If there is no aroma coming out of your spice jar, you need to get rid of it, because otherwise you're just sprinkling dust on your food. Spices do not have a very long shelf life. I mean, it's years long, but I know that everyone listening has spices in their cupboards that are 5+ years old. So before you dump them, just give them a smell. If they smell aromatic, use them. But if they smell like nothing, it's time to get some fresh ones. So spices are always good to have a variety of things. You know, the basics like cumin and coriander and stuff, but also some of my favorites to give them, you know, I like a lot of bang for my buck. So smoked paprika is one of my favorites. It's like it's paprika that's been smoked before it's dried and ground.
Yeah.
So it just has this great fiery grilled taste.
Yeah.
I love za'atar, which is a Mediterranean spice. It's ground. Sumac and sesame seeds and thyme sometimes. It's very sort of herbal and bright and fresh. And then all kinds of things like mustard and capers and olives and miso paste and maybe preserve lemons in your pantry, just because then you can cook simply. And then when you add a couple of exciting ingredients like some olives and capers, voila.
You know, I'm glad you brought that. Do you do any canning? You mentioned the preserved lemons, but we're doing a show sometime this fall on canning, and I've never seen it done before, but I know, you know, my grandmother used to have all kinds of canned items that she did herself. And I guess they keep for a long, long time.
They do. Well, if you can properly, it becomes a shelf-stable item, so that's why it's a very elaborate process in terms of boiling and cooling and sterilizing.
Yeah.
In order for them to live on the shelf. So like you put them down in your basement for the whole year, applesauce or, you know, cherries and cherries jubilee or whatever people can. But I do canning, meaning I do batch cooking, but I don't like to go through all those steps of sterilizing. So I just put it in my refrigerator. So you can can things and use the refrigerator as your storage option, as opposed to, you know, sucking the air out and boiling them.
I didn't
know. But yeah, canning is good. And also pickling is a good thing, which is another way to preserve food. So, you know, onions or fennel or celery or people love dilly beans, which is green beans with like vinegar and dill. So I like doing that too.
So you do pickling?
I do pickling. Because I do quick pickling, which is just basically submerging whatever food you want in a vinegar, any kind of clear vinegar, and then adding equal parts sugar and salt. So I do like a teaspoon of sugar, teaspoon of salt, and then, you know, like a half a cup of vinegar. And then anything you put in this brine, essentially, is going to soften and absorb this vinegary stuff. So I do a lot with cucumbers. So quick pickle cucumbers are kind of all summer long.
Jennifer Clare is our guest today. Listen, Lynn writes in, good quality dried mushrooms are a must in my pantry. They reconstitute easily, can make anything better, soups, gravy, filling for pot pies, galettes, egg dishes, you name it. Mushrooms make it better. And good mushrooms are expensive, so you can splurge on interesting varieties but not worry about them going bad in the fridge in a few days.
I love that suggestion. That is excellent. That is a good, and mushrooms are filled with what's called umami. Do you know what the word umami is? Have you heard that?
Yeah, it's taste, right?
It's a Japanese word, and it translates very loosely to deliciousness.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a taste that isn't in the sort of your basic taste, like hot, sour, salty, sweet, that you're used to categorizing. It's kind of like it's basically savoriness, where like the flavor is covering your entire mouth, not just like one little zone.
Ah.
And it comes in foods that naturally have glutamate. So like MSG, monosodium glutamate, is a man-made.
Yeah, love that stuff.
Something that's already naturally occurring. Yeah, but these glutamates exist naturally in various ingredients, and one of them is definitely mushrooms and tomatoes and soy. So it is a great way to add flavor to anything that is liquid-based. Just toss a couple of those dried mushrooms in there, and it really gives it a power punch.
We have to take a break, Jennifer Clare, but I'm amazed that you didn't think I knew what umami was. And turns out you were darn near right. All right, let's take a quick break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll get to more of your calls on the other side of the break. It's Vox Pop. It's Food Friday. Ray Graff with you, joined by Jennifer Clare today, who is holed up in a very small room in her house because the weather is lousy. 800-348-2551. You should have done this from your pantry. That would have been appropriate.
That would have been. So my pantry is filled with lots of hard things and glass, whereas my my closet's filled with nice soft clothes.
Don't fall asleep. We only have about 16, 17 minutes left. Okay, here's a question from Alexandria. What are we supposed to do and store potatoes and onions? How do we prevent them from growing roots when we don't eat them fast enough? I love that.
Yeah. Well, you have to eat them fast enough. There's not really much you can do. But the thing with onions and potatoes are that they're root vegetables. So when they are exposed to light, basically, they're going to try to grow a shoot. So you try to keep them in a low light environment, but not in your refrigerator. So definitely don't ever put your onions and potatoes in the refrigerator. They'll sprout even faster. So I usually keep them in a cupboard, because if they're sitting out in the light, they are going to grow that green shoot faster.
And that's not good for you, right?
It's not that it's not good for you. It just makes with potatoes, when a potato starts sprouting,
there's
you just
chlorophyll.
Have to cut all those little eyes off. Nothing has gone wrong with the potato.
Okay.
It's just trying to regenerate. It does what it's supposed to be doing, which is making more potato. And same thing with the onions. And with the onions, if you get a green shoot coming out of the top, just cut it in half and pull that green shoot out. The rest of the onion is fine. But definitely low light and room temperature is your best bet. But there's not, potatoes develop this green skin.
Yeah.
Or just sort of a green color right underneath the skin if they are exposed to light. So they should never be out in the open.
I thought that was bad, though.
It is bad. But you can peel. It's very easy to peel off, with a peeler. If you're going to peel the skin anyways, you just peel instead of once. You have to usually peel twice to get that green layer off. It's just bitter. But it's not dangerous unless you eat, 10,000 pounds of potatoes.
Okay, which I'll try not to do. Holly writes in, if cheese gets left unrefrigerated, like a brie that has been left out overnight, is it spoiled? Does smell give it the test for that? Does cheese that has a little mold on it mean that the whole wedge is no longer edible? That's from Holly.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, first of all, many cheeses in other countries, are left out. If you go to a cheese shop, a lot of the cheeses are on display at room temperature. So like dry-aged cheeses like Parmesan, Pecorino, they don't spoil. You can leave them out. And obviously, most cheeses are better at room temperature anyway. So I would leave a cheese out overnight and not freak out. With cheese, especially hard cheeses, if you get like a little bloom on it, like a little white or a blue dot of mold, you just cut it off. It does not permeate the cheese. It's just surface. And cheese is basically a molded item anyway, so it's going to naturally do that. But So just cut it off.
You know, while we're on the topic of fine cheese, here's a question that crossed my mind the other day in the store, and then we'll go to the phones again. So, you know, you have this fine cheese. It's called Velveeta. And a lot of times...
It ain't cheese.
Cut
it
out.
It's cheese food.
Bite your tongue, Claire. So anyway, I'm at the grocery store, you know, in years past, and it's in the regular aisle. It's with the Parmesan and everything else, not refrigerated. Lately, it's been refrigerated. Has something changed with my beloved Velveeta?
Likely not. It's funny. A lot of supermarkets put things that don't need to be refrigerated in the refrigerated section because it sells better and it looks better. Like, there are a lot of milks now that are, I cannot even remember what the name of it is, but basically they make them shelf stable, like they're in those boxes.
Yeah.
And they'll put them in the refrigerated aisle next to the other milks that have to be refrigerated, but it's more like optics. So if you saw Velveeta once on the shelf and now it's in the refrigerator, it's just... It's trying to get you to get it.
Let me tell you.
I've never seen Velveeta. I mean, I know Velveeta is not real cheese. It's a cheese product.
Oh, come
That's
on.
What it's called.
You're killing me. No, no.
Well, just it because it's not aging. It's not growing.
I'm kidding.
Cheese is a living thing, and Velveeta is a non-living thing.
Here's
Same
a taste
thing
treat,
cheese.
And we'll get off the topic, all right?
Okay.
You take a blender. You take some nice room temperature Velveeta, you mix it up real well, and you make a smoothie out of it. It's delicious, Jennifer.
I'll have to take your word for it.
Okay, speaking of Spam, this is from Cynthia. You're talking about Spam, and I just wanted to give a shout-out to my late son-in-law, Eric, who was from Austin, Minnesota, home of the Spam Museum. You can learn about every flavor of Spam as well as the history of Spam. It's very interesting. Don't really go in the summer. The entire town smells like Spam when it's hot and humid. Well, Cynthia, thank you for that one. Let's go to Amenia. Mary, you're on. I know you dropped a couple times, but I saw you earlier, and here you go. You're on with Jennifer Claire.
Thank you, Ray, and hi, Jennifer. I'm enjoying your show today. I wanted to share with you guys and with your audience tactical strategies for what you can use in the pantry for holistic healing. And I was a cardiac ICU nurse, and I left the medical system to create a holistic cardiac wellness program. And what I'm going to share with you is my morning coffee and what the tactical strategy is, and therefore nutrition. And also, Ray, you're scaring me with this talk of Velveeta and Spam.
Num, delicious. Anyway, carry on.
Don't be afraid.
Go ahead.
Okay, so do you want to hear the coffee?
Sure.
Okay, so ground ginger or fresh ginger grated into the coffee, which is good for digestion and decreasing inflammation. Cinnamon, which is great for glucose control. Cardamom, great for digestion. Cayenne pepper, which is a natural blood thinner, and it has stopped people from having a heart attack, believe it or not.
I'll be darned.
It's an antiplatelet. Yeah, it stops platelet aggregation.
It sounds like chai.
What'd you say, Jennifer?
Yeah.
It sounds like chai. There's like an Indian tea that spices many of those flavors.
Cool.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
I haven't tried it in coffee
yet. And it tastes like it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that very much.
Oh, it's
tea.
Great. And
I like that idea.
Yeah, so the cayenne...
You know, Mary. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. The cayenne also heals the insides of your arteries, which have been damaged maybe from inflammation. So it's very good. It does not hurt your stomach, contrary to popular belief.
Okay.
And then some local honey, which is great for allergies, and it's antimicrobial. Some raw milk, which is great for your microbiome.
Okay.
And it's like coffee salad almost.
All right, Mary,
delicious.
I'm going to let you go, Mary, but Holly Shelowitz will be on in not too long, and she does a lot of this sort of thing that you do. Please call back when Holly is on, and we'll talk more about this topic.
I know Holly.
Oh, good. Perfect. Well, thanks for calling. 800-348-2551. That's the number. Jane in Lenox says, hey, have you found any pantry-friendly version of cilantro that tastes anything like the fresh herb?
None. That's... The thing with dried herbs, I really don't recommend any of them except oregano. Oregano seems to be the one dried herb that maintains its integrity, but most of the others, like dried basil, dried parsley, dried dill, they're just not worth using because they just don't have, they have just basically zero flavor. So I can't, and cilantro is so specific.
Yeah.
That one's just worth buying fresh and using. Although I will tell you, when it comes to herbs, I feel like a lot of times, when I'm teaching, people are reticent to buy a whole bunch of herbs because it looks like it's too much and it's going to go bad in their pantry. They're only using it for one recipe. So it gets people not buying fresh herbs as much as they should. And I really, the way to combat that is really to use so many more fresh herbs than a recipe might call for. Like, I always scoff at a recipe that calls for like 2 tablespoons chopped cilantro or dill or whatever. That just seems like a silly amount.
Yeah.
Herbs should be used in much more abundance, so you really shouldn't have leftover herbs. You could use a cup of fresh cilantro in like a black bean chili. It would be amazing, and then you'd really taste it. Those kinds of herbs don't, you know, I wouldn't do that with like rosemary or thyme. That would ruin a dish. Like, no more, no cups of chopped rosemary. But those leafy herbs,
yeah,
cilantro especially, just use more and buy the fresh.
Well, I mean, no, it's great because if you dump enough of that in, you can be a lousy cook and people will still think, wow, this is quite
something. I agree.
Yeah.
That's why spices and herbs are key. They really can, you know, there's very little work and they, you feel like a chef.
You know, Jennifer,
like open up a can of beans and dumped in a lot of spices and herbs and voila.
You've given me a lot of ideas for my next Spam and Velveeta dish. Let's go to East Hoosick and it's Nina's turn. Hello, Nina. You're on with Jennifer Clare.
Hi, thank you so much. When I got my first apartment in New York and I was, you know, in my late teens, I got it from someone who was a little older than me, and she had all these dried goods in her pantry on shelves. Mm-hmm. And from then on, and now I'm in my late 70s, I have always had that. And so I just, you know, it's delightful to look at all the grains, all the beans, and many types of pastas. I have different kinds of vinegars. All the things you listed, I won't repeat them. And, you know, full panoply of spices and all that. You know, one thing that I enjoy because of this is, you know, I have, like, some things last a long time in your refrigerator, right? Some things don't. But cabbage, for instance. So today I had, you know, canned cannellini beans. I had, red cabbage, and I, you know, grated it very fine, and I had some leftover tomato soup from a box, and I put that together, added some of my dried spices, including the favorite, yes, smoked paprika and some za'atar, and, you know, then you have something, and with the rest of that cabbage, I made a slaw with some, you know, vegan mayonnaise and apple and raisin and one of my vinegars. So I just wanted to say
that
having all of that in the, you know, at my disposal, you know, I used to be a real, like, you know, I cooked all the time. I don't do that anymore, you know, but what I have is, you know, I've cooked from all over the world. I've even done it professionally, but what I do have, and I realize from this show, and I appreciate you having it, is I have all these ingredients that are here for me, you know, and then I have to restock. But even things that are in the refrigerator, and I got that from my mother, you know, like taking so-called leftovers, even things that have been, not leftovers, things I happen to have, you know, like a quarter of a head of cabbage, some cans of cannellini beans. You know, I used to make the cannellini all myself, and I said, what the heck, do this and throw in some garlic, you know.
I love cabbage. You're right in that it's absolutely, it lasts for months. And but I would also tell people,
yeah, it's red cabbage.
I use cabbage all the time. And if I cut the cabbage in half and I keep the other half in the fridge, it will last for so long. But sometimes when you take it out, it will have like a discoloration on the cut part.
Yeah.
And I want people to know that you can cut, like, that is like millimeters thick. So just slice off that oxidized part on the outside, and you'll see it's bright white right below the surface.
Uh-huh.
So don't throw away cabbage that has a little brown film on it, because it will start to oxidize when you cut it. But like cheese, slice it off, and it's a fresh beautiful vegetable right underneath there.
You know, Jennifer Claire, this has been remarkably successful. Sometimes, you know, we come up with a concept and I say, well,
right.
I'm a little skeptical. And, you know, this was one of those times. It's been a tremendous number of calls and we're not going to get to them all. But let's go to Matt in Sullivan County. Matt, you got a minute and a half here. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to add something to the vacuum seal conversation.
Yeah.
If you're taking out from the freezer food in a vacuum sealed package, you should remove it from the vacuum sealed package right away. Don't let anything defrost in a vacuum sealed package. It can encourage the growth of anaerobic bacteria, which don't need oxygen to grow, and they can be harmful.
What do you think? Jennifer.
Well, I mean, that may be true, but if you're using it right away, I usually do tell people if you're going to take out like a vacuum sealed pack of like, say, sausages, you can take it, it's still in the vacuum sealed, and put it in a bowl of room temperature water because it allows it to defrost in about 20 minutes as opposed to hours in the refrigerator because of the direct contact of the water. It's denser than air. So I would, okay. And because I don't want to put meat directly into water, I do keep it in the plastic. But yes, then I would take it out of the plastic once it's defrosted in 20 minutes and cook it right away. But I do tell people to defrost it at least with the vacuum seal so it doesn't get waterlogged.
Well, I think this was a really successful program. Rick wrote in, the square footage of pasta and pasta sauce that I have in my pantry outweighs all the other items by far. The possibilities are endless, and you can usually be sitting down and eating within a half an hour. You see?
Yes.
There you
agreed.
Go. Agreed. All right, Jennifer Claire, how do people find you? How do people find out more about Home Cooking New York?
Well, probably everything is on our website, homecookingny.com.
You are fantastic. Now you can open the door. You can get. I'm surprised you didn't, asphyxiate in there. So
no, I haven't suffocated yet.
Thanks for doing the show, and we will. I think you might be booked one more time in the fall, but I'm not sure.
I hope so. And, maybe, and hopefully the weather will be good. I can drive up.
At this point, I'm going to send a car for you. You know, there you
okay.
go. Hey, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Support comes from Hudson Farmers Market, Saturdays 9 to 1 at 6th and Columbia Street in Hudson, featuring Blue Star Farm, Happy Belly, Sparrow Bush Bakery, and more year-round. HudsonFarmersMarketNY.org. River Valley Co-op in Northampton and East Hampton, supporting local farmers and featuring local produce, dairy, meat, and cheese, rivervalley.co-op. And Herzog's Home and Paint Centers, Kingston, Poughkeepsie, Fishkill, Albany, and Latham, specializing in Benjamin Moore paints and stains for professionals and homeowners with decorating consultants available, herzogs.com. Thanks again to Jennifer Claire for being with us today. Thank you for listening. Good times. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Nathan Scheid, who screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Okay, you have a great weekend. But stick around for a little bit. It's Listener Appreciation Week here. As soon as Count Basie and the orchestra wrap up this tune, we're going to hear a little more about your station, your stories, and we'll hear from one of the voices that keeps this station strong. Remember, you can help this station stay alive in these tough times by calling 800-323-9262 and making your pledge. Have a lovely weekend. We'll see you Monday.